Welcome back, listeners. This is going to be an amazing show today because we are going to talk all about how do we listen to our body's natural hunger signals and cues, understand why we crave the foods we crave, and how do we unlearn bad eating habits. We're also going to talk about the mind-body connection through our psychobiotics. This is our healthy gut bacteria that helps to influence our mood. We're going to talk about how sleep and getting out in the sun can actually impact our hunger. And how do we learn to tame our cravings in the moment? My guest today is Dr. Amy Shaw. She is the author of I'm So Effing Hungry, a science-based plan designed to help you take charge of your health and your cravings without feeling deprived. Your cravings aren't your fault, and eating a healthier diet isn't just a matter of self-discipline and willpower. Let's talk today about the powerful biological forces that govern our hunger levels and our cravings. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus, you'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Dr. Amy Shaw is a double board certified medical doctor and nutrition expert with training from Cornell, Columbia, and Harvard universities. Drawing from her background in internal medicine and allergy and immunology, as well as her own wellness journey, she has dedicated her practice to helping her patients feel better and live healthier lives through integrative and holistic approaches to wellness. She was named one of MindBody Green's top 100 women in wellness to watch in 2015, and she appears regularly on national television shows and podcasts and in national magazines. She lives in Arizona with her family, and you can learn more about her on Instagram at FastingMD or online at amymdwellness.com. Dr. Amy Shaw, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you for having me, Lindsay.
I am so excited. I first heard about your new book, I'm So Effing Hungry, a couple of weeks ago on the Mind Body Green podcast and was just so impressed by the amount of research that you have done into understanding hunger signals, what is hijacking our hunger, how are we abusing ourselves by not following the patterns that we're supposed to be eating along. And I also love how you have a background in Ayurveda, because Ayurveda is so in tune with eating with the seasons and eating in a way that honors our body's chemistry. So talk to us and just start us with the basics. How did our hunger get so messed up? Because I ask people all the time, tell me the last time that you genuinely felt hungry. And a lot of people can't identify it. So how have we lost something so critical to our survival?
Absolutely, Lindsay. So it's the same question that, you know, we have about why we're so tired and why we're so sad. It's basically, we are built to be one sunflowers. So we need sunlight. We are built to move, and we are built to eat things that feed our gut bacteria. Our gut bacteria are not only commensal, meaning that they live in our bodies, but they actually create chemicals of happiness, of cravings, and they send signals to our immune system and our brain about what's going on. And so when you keep them starving, which you'll be shocked, but 97% of people don't eat what the gut bacteria need to thrive. And so you're starving these key members of our mood and craving signals. And then we wonder, oh, why are we so tired all the time? Why are we so hungry all the time? And why are we so sad? And it's because of this gut-brain connection. So we need to start feeding that gut bacteria the food it wants. We need to give it the sunlight it needs and the movement that it craves.
So, what are the best ways to give the sunlight, the movement, and the food that nourish our gut bacteria?
It's so simple, but because of modern times, people just didn't don't realize when these food manufacturers, for example, we can villainize them all we want, but really we live in this now, we live in this world where it's so easy to get foods that just create a dopamine explosion in our brain, but that don't feed our gut bacteria at all. It's just like a food-like substance that has no fiber. It has no vitamins, and it keeps us hungry. So, for example, I'll give you an example. Gut bacteria, they love fiber, and they love brightly colored pigments that occur naturally in plants, like blueberries, bell peppers, all these like green, blue, red, polyphenols. They love fermented foods, so things like, sauerkraut, kimchi. But when we live in this modern world, we are consuming often 75 to 80% of food-like substances, which have no nutrition for this bacteria.
And what's the downside to that? Like, why does that matter?
Yeah. If the gut bacteria feel hungry and they're not fed, they often die off. And these are like army, they're like the soldiers of our body. We need them to fight off infections. We need them to create happiness chemicals. Most people don't know, but 50% of your dopamine and 90% of your serotonin is actually made in your gut, and it correlates to the amount of dopamine and serotonin in your brain. And so when your gut bacteria are not happy and they're starving, hungry, and think about it, it's like these children that are living in your body that are helping you, and they're starving and they're crying and they're hungry. And when you eat something with fiber, when you eat something full of nutrients, a whole food, basically things that don't require labeling or ingredients, you are feeding that gut bacteria what it wants. But 97% of Americans are not feeding their gut bacteria what it actually needs. And it's minimal stuff. It's like, 40, so the minimum amount of fiber a day is 20 grams. So even if you got 20 grams, you would be ahead of 97% of people. It's not really hard. So what I talk about in the book is, hey, it's not superfoods, it's not vitamins and supplements. It's literally foods that you can find in your local market grocery store. And it's not going to be expensive. It's just recognizing that this is what's going on. And as we see depression skyrocketing, we see obesity skyrocketing, like they're hand in hand. So we know that there's like this food, mood, obesity connection also. So I just think that, this is not just about getting in shape or looking cute in a bathing suit or whatever. This is about really figuring out the underpinnings of why this is all happening.
And you talk about how there's a difference between hunger and craving and appetite. And as I mentioned, I don't think people have a really good gauge on what hunger actually is. It's just snacking all day, every day, just for the sake of it. So, what's the differentiation between hunger, craving, and appetite?
Yeah, this is a good one. I'll give you an example of when I went to India. I used to go to India every summer when I was a kid because my mom's entire family lived there. And when we moved to the US, she would miss them. So every school break, we would go there and I would see how people would eat there. And my cousins, who were my age, they weren't snacking all day and they weren't eating lollipops and having soda and having snacks. What they would do is they would eat breakfast and then they would eat nothing but water until lunch. And then they would finish their lunch and drink a big glass of water. And then they would have nothing until late afternoon, maybe 4. And so said to myself, oh my gosh, are we really eating when we're hungry or are we just eating for pleasure? And so that's the difference. Hunger is the true need for nutrients. Cravings is the need for pleasure from food. And of course we want food pleasure, right? Like part of life is having a beautiful meal, but it shouldn't all be for food pleasure. So that's the difference between hunger and cravings. Cravings, the food pleasure pathway is the same pleasure pathway that gambling, addictions, alcohol, and Instagram, all of that stuff. It's all the dopamine pathway. And then appetite is the overall interest or disinterest in food. So when some people are depressed, their appetite goes way down. Other people, their appetite goes way up. Often when you see an animal who's sick, you'll see that they just don't have an appetite. So appetite's like the interest or disinterest in food that can happen during times of stress.
So let's talk more about the modernization of food, because you mentioned a moment ago that we can eat foods that cause this huge dopamine surge. And the problem with dopamine surges is that your body can only make dopamine so fast, and then it kind of, it's the same as addiction. I think of amphetamines comes really close to mind because it so rapidly depletes dopamine and serotonin, which is how you get the tolerance, which is why you need increasing doses, which is why and it sounds like the same thing is happening with this modern engineered food, which is specifically designed to hit that bliss point. How did we get to this? How is most modern food engineered? And how did we get like so far down this slippery slope of we don't even know what food is anymore? We just eat food like products.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's marketing, it's business, just like anything else. Okay. So we often don't think about food creating mood or food creating negative, you know, outcomes, even in health. What people always think is, oh, everything in moderation, like you can have your Doritos in moderation. And the problem is that these foods are created in a way that will keep you wanting more. So the thing about dopamine that you mentioned with amphetamines and with alcohol is that when you start to get that rush of dopamine, you love it. But quickly, as soon as it dissipates, you have a craving for more. And so dopamine has this effect on you where it's almost pleasurable mixed with pain. Like you get this pleasure, but all of a sudden you're thinking, when am I going to get this again? Like, am I eating too much? Like, is this, you know, I love this food so much that I could keep eating it. So it's like this pleasure, but quickly it turns into pain of wanting more, figuring out when to have it again. And so, yes, you can fit junk foods into your diet. And at this point, you know, almost everything, almost every person is having some sort of this junk food, but this is not the same as adding apples or blueberries to your diet. Like when you eat blueberries, you get a sprinkle of dopamine compared to what you get with like, say, a milkshake or a Slurpee or something. But with blueberries, the fiber and the polyphenols, they feed that gut bacteria. That gut bacteria says, hey, time to stop eating. You're full. Your body's like, okay, I'm done. You're not going to have this feeling of like, oh my God, when am I going to get it again? Like I need to get in the car and get, you know, wet. And I don't know about you, but almost everyone can think of like, okay, freshly baked cookies or donuts or Doritos, or my kids love these chili lime chips at Trader Joe's and they're like a Takis knockoff. And it's like, and my daughter said this to me, she said, oh, I know what you're talking about. I feel that way with the chili lime chips. Like I'm always thinking about like, when can I have it again? Like, when is it my turn to have that? You know, you don't get that with actual foods. These engineered foods, they know how to create that explosion to keep you coming back.
You know, it reminds me of the movie Super Size Me, where Morgan goes through and he's eating McDonald's 2 and 3 times a day, every single day. And he goes to his physician and says, I feel so gross and bad and run down. And then all of a sudden I eat it again and I feel normal. And she's like, that is addiction. And listeners, please go back and listen to my interview with Dr. Joan Ifland, who wrote the book on processed food addiction, because it was really sad talking to her, because I said, you know, how do we undo this processed food addiction? And she's like, your brain has already been wired for it. You can be conscious and you can manage the processed food addiction, but actually breaking it and like realizing that you're not going to crave, you know, the brand new crumble cookie that just came out of the oven, is sad that we've gotten to this point where we've lost our connection with the foods of the earth. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Are you looking for the ultimate superfood to boost your health and wellness? Look no further than Purely Liver from North American Herb and Spice. This 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef liver from New Zealand is packed with over 30 essential vitamins and nutrients that your body craves. There are no additives, no chemicals, and you can feel really good about what you're putting into your body. What makes Purely Liver so different? Well, no other food on earth contains the natural combination of nutrients that are essential for optimal health. And with the convenience of a clean chlorophyll capsule, making it less allergenic. The ingredients are all natural, chemical, and GMO-free, and a great way to make sure your body is getting all the nutrients that it needs. Head to lindsayelmore.com/liver and shop code Lindsay25 to save 25% off your order of Purely Liver. That's lindsayelmore.com/liver and shop code Lindsay25 to save 25%. On one of nature's most nutrient-dense superfoods. And now, let's get back to the show. Talk to us about, like, unlearned eating. What does that mean?
So just the same way we have been taught to crave these negative foods, there's a way to retrain your brain to actually crave positive, happy, good foods. So once you establish in the book, it says, okay, here are the foods that your gut bacteria loves. Okay. So you're like, all right, I got this, but you know, I am still craving Kit Kats every time I do something good, because that's what my reward was since I was a kid. And now there's a version of, you know, supersized Kit Kats that I can get Kit Kat in many, many different forms, and something like Kit Kat that reminds me of Kit, whatever. So what you can do is take yourself into, understand that you have learned a pattern, and, you know, your body just wants comfort. Your brain and your neurological system, they just want comfort. And so you may be able to get that comfort from a massage or from a sunny walk, or you could even take a healthier version of that food and train yourself to crave it. So take something that's delicious that might be similar to a Kit Kat, but healthier. So maybe like a dark chocolate, piece of dark chocolate that's 80% or more. And what you do is you start to retrain your brain to like that. And I talk about a technique where dopamine receptors love surprise reward in a surprise form. So what I talk about is 3 random days a week, you get a reward. So you might pick out of a jar every single day. And, you know, one day it'll say good job. And the next day it'll say treat day, you know, treat day number one. And you're like, yes. And that's the day you get to have your healthy treat. And then I talk about talking through this and getting that dark chocolate and talking through, like, this is a treat for me. It's a reward because I'm doing such a good job. I'm choosing something that's healthy. This is so delicious. And really talking yourself into really loving this food. And then the one part of it, so it's 3-2-1, 3 days a week, 2 minutes of CBT. So talking to yourself I talk therapy and I talk about, like, in the book, exactly how to do that. And then 1 minute savoring the food, just sitting down, no cell phone, no distractions, because we know that when you have your cell phone out and you're eating, you're really not making those neural connections that you need to. You need to taste it. You need to savor it, even if it's just 1 minute. Because like you said, it's like we have these neural connections from when we're little kids.
Mm-hmm. And even before, I mean, the neural connections in relationship to the foods that we crave go back to when we were in utero. I mean, like, our mom's food cravings become our own. I'm interested, why is the savoring the food so important?
Yeah. So when we eat, I just wrote a post about, like, distracted eating, for example. And that's a big problem, right? In our world, everyone's watching TV or they're on their phones. They're not really interacting. They're just mostly eating distracted. And as you would imagine, when you eat distracted, you're not really paying attention to your fullness signals. You are eating things that are very highly palatable, usually, like things like chips and cookies and things that you can eat in front of a TV or a computer. And so when I talk about retraining these pathways, we have to understand that part of the problem is we don't give our attention. We don't even hear the fullness signals or the signals of, like, okay, your body has had enough. So really, one of the things I've learned recently is that my phone, although it's my biggest tool, it's my biggest distraction, especially around mealtimes. And so one of the strategies that I talk about is really managing, you know, how you're eating too. Like, are you sitting down? Are you eating in the order that you should be eating? Are you eating highly ultra processed foods every single day? So things that, not like you said, it's not like about solving the problem to zero. It's about just being mindful of it so that we went from eating 60% ultra processed food to the new generation of adolescents eating 75% ultra processed. So 15% rise in this generation. You can imagine it'll be like 90% for the next generation if we don't do something about this.
Well, and okay, so full disclosure, I don't have any children, so of course I know exactly how to raise all the children. But I think that sometimes it is difficult. People are living very, very busy lives. But to simply sit back and say, it is what it is. Everybody else is eating ultra processed foods. Like, they can't avoid it at the birthday party. And so therefore, what's the point of me trying to avoid it in my home? This defeatist attitude around feeding children is so detrimental, because we're starting to see the appearance of cardiometabolic disease in children that are younger and younger and younger. And so you mentioned your daughter with her imposter talkies. How do you go about instilling a sense of, I know that you're going to go to school and you are going to have the option to eat pizza and French fries or salad and apple? How on earth do you get a kid to eat the salad and the apple?
Absolutely. That's a struggle. I have two kids. One is 15, one is 13. So they're teens now. And I found that the best strategy is the don't say what you want them to do, do what you want them to do, because inevitably they will, even if they say, like, oh, that's so annoying, or, you know, why do you always do this? But I try to take the approach of, like, okay, you make the decision, you're a teen now, but here's the, you know, healthy way to do it. And this is how I'm doing it. So my teen that's 15, he said to me, all right, he said, I'm all in, I want to be better at sports. You know, it kind of came from a different way, motivation. And he said, I think the only way I'm going to be better at sports is if I really clean up my diet. And then he said, you know, what are the things that I need to be eating more of and less of? And that's the way I have approached it, because I find that if you take the bad and good approach, like, this is bad, that's it, just makes you want it more. Like, you know how teenage years work. And we know that we mimic our family members, the people we spend the most time with, is the people you become. So you really just have to become the person that you want them to become and hope. And it's just like relationships, right? You can't make someone do something. You just keep on doing it and hope that one day they'll ask about it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And, you know, I seriously ruffled some feathers at the height of COVID, when we started to understand that the virus enters our cells via the ACE2 receptor, and the ACE2 receptor is one of the most widely distributed receptors in our bodies, and it is specifically important for cardiometabolic disease. And that's why we have medications that treat blood pressure that act on this receptor. And one of the things that I mentioned is that, look, we're ignoring the elephant in the room. I so wish, looking back on the experience of COVID, that we had taken a moment to say, okay, we've got a virus coming for us. It's a novel virus. We don't know what to expect. But we know that people who have cardiometabolic illness are at a greater risk for every single disease, every single infection that is out there. We need to focus on the diet, the exercise, the stress reduction, the sleep patterns, the everything that we've been telling you to do, we need you to actually do right now. And I really ruffled feathers when I said, you guys, we need to come to the conclusion that cardiometabolic disease is also contagious. We spread it at, you know, church picnics that have fried chicken and macaroni and cheese. We spread it by the way that we treat school children. And so talk to us about what your research has led you to believe about how cravings and food preferences do become contagious when we don't do what we want people around us to do.
I mean, it's exactly what you said. You know how we always talk about we're the five people that we spend the most time with? Well, you're also the five people you spend the most, your bacteria spend the most time with. So your bacteria in your gut that I'm talking about modulates mood, modulates cravings, modulates hunger, appetite. These bacteria also jump from person to person. And in fact, there's a company out there that sells the bacteria, the poop, you know, pills of elite athletes, because we know not only does it spread good mood, cravings, and cardiometabolic health, we can also spread motivation and mindset kind of molecules through the gut bacteria. And so you really can, if you spend a lot of time with someone who's extremely successful in multiple ways, it can rub off on you because of their gut bacteria and their habits, their thoughts, and just mere presence. So it's just, when you think about it that way, oh my God, we should be editing our circle like crazy, right? Because if the way I would think about it is, you don't have kids, but if you had kids, would you want that child to grow up to be any of the five people that you spend the most time with? Because their mood, their motivation, their habits, their jobs, their kind of outlook on life is contagious. And so when you think about it that way, it just makes you feel like, wow, I need to really put boundaries on, you know, who I'm spending time with online and offline, because it's creating my reality. And it's just like the old ancient texts always knew that, but now we're understanding the science behind it as it relates to also eating behavior and movement and motivation and mood. So it's fascinating.
It is so fascinating. I think the word contagious has been almost bastardized to mean just this one thing, but habits are contagious. Laughter is contagious. You know, joy is contagious, as is sadness, depression, bad eating patterns, all of it. Now, I really want to talk so much more about the microbiome. And I also want to talk a lot about sleep, because You taught me, I believe, listening to you on the Ed Milette show, that your microbiome has a circadian rhythm as well. So talk to us about what is chrononutrition? How does sleep impact the way that we eat? And how do we best honor the circadian rhythm of our natural hunger patterns?
Yeah. The natural hunger patterns, you know, because when you travel to a new time zone, you have just wacky times that you're hungry, right? You're hungry in the middle of the night or like at those weird times, because that's your microbiome. That's your microbiome. Your gut has a clock that independently functions. They take input from the external world, but it takes a few days for them to shift when you've shifted location. But just like you shift your timings when you're traveling, you can shift your timings when you're not traveling by shifting the way that your body sees food, light, and activity. So if you're someone who wants to say, okay, I've heard a lot about overnight fasting, circadian rhythms, living closer to circadian rhythms. My circadian rhythms are out of whack. So I'm going to try to retrain them. And so one of the things you can do is get up like 20 minutes at a time. You can change this. So you might get up 20 minutes earlier, get bright sunlight, give your body input that it's daytime. And the first day or two, it's going to be difficult to wake up and get that sun. But after day three or so, your circadian clock has shifted. And the same thing goes for dinners. Like if you're like, hey, I know that if I stop eating 2 to 3 hours before bed, I'm going to get a better night's sleep. But it's really hard because my hunger patterns don't match that. So take it 20 minutes at a time. Move up your dinner by 20 minutes. And the first couple of days, it will be hard because you'll not feel hungry and then you'll feel hungry at a different time. But your patterns of food and light are the strongest inputs to your circadian rhythms. And so if you make it really dark, you know, 20 minutes before you're usually used to going to bed, all of a sudden that's an input to your circadian centers to start to get sleepy. And so day one and day two, it may be difficult. You may be sitting there in the dark for 20 minutes, but after day three, you got it. So that's how you start to shift it.
So, you know, I think everybody tries to make everything so all or nothing. And what I love about what you're saying is, no, just do it a few minutes at a time. It's one good decision that begets the next. So let's go back from whence we came. You know, we started this whole conversation talking about how we don't feed our body what the gut bacteria actually want to eat. Talk to us about the gut microbiome. How do we feed it well? Are there certain foods that we can eat that really have profound impact on our mood? And why is the gut considered the second brain?
Yeah, I'll start with the last one. The gut is considered the second brain because in utero, they're one. They're connected. And as you grow, they stay connected through the spinal cord and the vagus nerve, but they kind of separate. But you have this connection, this network throughout your life where they're communicating we know at least 5 different ways they communicate, including the nervous system. So that's why it's kind of one big thing. That's why you get this gut feeling, like sinking feeling when something bad is about to happen or something bad is happening. It's almost before your brain even registers it. You get that feeling in your gut because those are nerves that were that learned a pattern. So that's what a gut feeling is. And so that's something that you can recognize and understand how that gut brain connection works. Now, the gut microbiome is the collection of viruses, bacteria, fungi, and our own cells that create kind of the decisions that they send to the brain, right? So you want to feed that gut microbiome. You want to take care of it. You want to, like I described it like a starving, crying baby. You want to make it grow, you want to have it flourish, and you want to feed it the things it needs. And unfortunately, like we talked about, Lindsay, we live in a world where it's very difficult now to feed them what they want, because they want these basic things like fiber that's been stripped out of so many foods. It wants basic things like fermentation, which used to be necessary when we didn't have refrigeration. But now it's really hard to find fermented foods if you aren't looking for them. You know, the only thing that's maybe readily available fermented is like yogurt and probiotic cottage cheese, some cheeses, some kombuchas, right? So getting some fermented foods, some foods with actual fiber, and then brightly colored vegetables and fruits contain polyphenols. And that includes tea and dark chocolate and coffee also. They contain polyphenols. So in the book, I kind of give 6 categories of foods that you should be including on a daily basis if you wanted to be at the highest level. But even if you just did one thing, added one probiotic food a day, you would be well on your way to improving your gut bacteria.
So, all right. So let's talk through the 6 categories. We've got our probiotic food. It sounds like we've got these polyphenols, which are found within the brightly colored vegetables. What else?
Fiber.
Yes.
Then we have glucosinolates are a special vegetable that has these sulfur compounds. So this is your broccoli, cauliflower, your Brussels sprouts, your kale, collard greens. There's a bunch in there, but they have special compounds that actually feed the bacteria. So you want those things. Omega-3 fatty acids. So omega-3 fatty acids have these amazing properties of both making you feel fuller and feeding that gut bacteria what it needs. And so you have that. And so, okay. So fiber, polyphenols, glucosinolates, omega-3 fatty acids. What did I miss? Oh, high protein foods and high dopamine foods. So high protein foods are high amino acid foods. So all the things that you would consider in lean proteins, meats, but also beans, lentils, nuts. And then high dopamine foods are foods that actually create dopamine in our gut. And so that you get a boost in your mood and you have less of the cravings for artificial dopamine. And so wouldn't that be nice if we could kind of calm those cravings for unhealthy dopamine by raising our baseline dopamine? So things like dairy products, nuts, seeds, berries, like especially cherries, they raise our dopamine levels in a way that, you know, gives us a baseline boost of dopamine. So we're not like fiending for it all the time.
So what's your opinion? Because dairy can be so allergenic in a lot of people. And, you know, are you in the like, must be raw dairy, must be full fat dairy, skim milk's just fine. Like, how do we, and we also have, when we think of dairy, I think of cheeses, which have so many of the caseomorphins in there that are like, you know, everybody's like, I'm addicted to cheese. And I'm like, you literally are. And so how do we pick the correct dairy?
Yeah. Dairy is one of those things like gluten that you have to check your relationship with them, because right now the way dairy and gluten are presented are in ice creams, pizza, tacos. And so you're getting a lot of processed dairy and a processed gluten. So what I did, and I recommend everybody do this, is first eliminate it for a short period of time to see what your relationship is. I noticed, when I stopped eating pizza and bagels and sandwiches, I felt so much better. And a lot of people do, because it's like a lot of processed foods just use gluten. And the same thing with dairy. You know, when I stopped eating ice creams and all these processed dairy items, I felt better. But what I did then is I started to add some fermented dairy back, meaning yogurt and cottage cheese that was probiotic. And I started to experiment. Oh, look at that. If I have yogurt, a little bit of yogurt, a little bit of cottage cheese, don't have any issues, GI issues. I actually feel better. And then I started to feel the same way about gluten. Like, it wasn't actually the gluten itself, for me at least, and everybody's different. It was the fact of the fact that it was contained in all these foods that were making me feel sick. So if I actually had like a piece of sourdough or like a cracked wheat salad, you know, like it wasn't bad and I didn't feel terrible. And I felt like it actually increased the diversity of my diet, which is really important for gut health. So I think that's the problem with a lot of people. We follow these talking heads, these dogmatic people who say, don't eat that, don't eat this. And you're left with nothing to eat. And you're just not even sure, you know, what to do anymore. So that's the way I kind of talk about in the book is like, I say, you know, here is the list of dopamine boosting foods. Now there's dairy items or non-dairy items. And you really do have to do it, see where your gut is at. So often when you heal your gut, you're able to tolerate a lot of these things.
So I teach the 5R protocol that was taught to me in functional medicine about how do we heal leaky gut. And your 5-step plan not only helps us to work on our leaky gut, but also unwind these pathways that we have for cravings of processed foods. And I don't want us to go through every single all of the 5 steps because I want everybody to go and buy a copy of I'm So Effing Hungry so that you can learn how to reframe these decades old dieting patterns and stop fighting what's on the scale. But let's just make it really simple. Like, what's the first small change that you would encourage our listeners to make today so they can stop being so effing hungry?
Okay. The first thing, I'll give you one non-food and one food. The first non-food thing to do is get more sunlight. Sunlight releases not only feel-good chemicals in our brain, it also releases a hormone called alpha MSH, which keeps us fuller all day long. The one food item I will say, and I said it earlier, is add in one probiotic item. It seems so daunting in the beginning because you're like, oh my God, what's a probiotic food? Like, how do I even find it? But once you find it, it could be a fermented coconut water. It can be a kimchi. It can be natto, which is a Korean or a Japanese fermented soy. It can be sauerkraut. It can be raw apple cider vinegar. It can be a yogurt that just has probiotics. It literally one thing and you start to change your gut bacteria and just that one thing.
I love that. And listeners, go back and listen to my interview with Dr. Bill Davis talking about how you can create your own probiotic infused yogurts at home using specific bacteria to address specific gut issues, especially small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which you get that Lactobacillus reuteri in your day. I also just love having different versions of sauerkraut in my fridge. And so, you know, sure, white cabbage, but you can also get like fermented beets, fermented carrots. You can find all kinds of things that basically it's just adding pickles to your food. And, you know, you're said your mother's family is from India. Indian cuisine is so rich with these fermented pickles that just add so much depth of flavor without adding really any fat and almost no calories. And so just tossing some of that on top of a dish can just be an amazing, amazing way to just do the one thing. So you mentioned alpha MSH. No guest has ever brought this up to me before. So talk to us about, is this a hormone? Is it a neurotransmitter? How does it relate to leptin and ghrelin? Like, how is this helping us to stay full all day?
Yeah, so alpha MSH is melanocyte stimulating hormone. So it's exactly what you think about. It's a hormone that's also related to the pigment of our skin. So when you get that release, you actually get a dampening of your appetite during the day. So basically what happens is you get the input of light from your retina. You have all these things that are released actually from your hypothalamus, but one of them is that hormone that actually kind of increases your satiety for the day. So it's working on your leptin pathways and your CCK pathways, which is your closest to kinin. These are, you know, your fullness hormones. And you might notice like when you're out and about and getting a lot of sunlight, that you just feel more satisfied with foods and otherwise, it's because of that.
I love it so much because it really, you know, it really brings together what your book does so well, which is teach us how sleep, the clock, the way that we eat, how we eat, what we eat is all really an elegant chemistry experiment that our body does for us when we pay attention to why we eat and how we eat.
Absolutely.
Yes. All right, listeners, go and check out www.amymdwellness.com and pick up a copy of I'm So Effing Hungry anywhere that you pick up books. It's a science-based plan to help you take charge of your health and your cravings without feeling deprived. Dr. Amy Shaw, it has been such an honor to speak to you today here on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kids Mood Plus and Mental Heart from Amare are now patented supplements. Kids Mood Plus contains the unique combination of saffron, holy basil, rosemary, oregano, clove, and a prebiotic fiber, which supports both mood and mental focus in children. The good news is that all of us adults take Kids Mood Plus as well. It is a great way to calm down fast and get into a better mood with more clarity of focus. Menta Heart contains the unique combination of astaxanthin and palm fruit extract, which supports the performance of the heart-brain axis. We think about the gut-brain axis, but the gut is your sensory organ. It's a sensing brain. Your actual brain is your thinking brain. But the emotional center is our heart. And when we take Menta Heart, we are able to best support the cellular, neuronal, and biochemical connection between the heart and the brain. You can head to lindsayelmore.com/patent to grab a cart full of Happy Juice, Kids Mood Plus, and Menta Heart. That's lindsayelmore.com/patent to celebrate these brand new 2 patented products. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support The Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag @Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.